to the Leamington United Mennonite Church Sunday Morning Message Podcast. For more information about Leamington United Mennonite Church, please visit our website at www.lumc.ca.
Mantras in the Western world is the phrase, "I'm spiritual but not religious." I hear it all the time. It's a rejection of the forms, patterns, and traditions that religion brings in favor of something of someone's own creation. To be spiritual is to be connected to the transcendent. To be spiritual is to be acceptable. To be religious is, well, not. But whoever decided that spiritual is assumed to be more good, more true, and deeper, and that religious is bad, false, and shallow? That religion is made up, but being spiritual is more enlightened, more authentic. Is it enough to just be spiritual, or do we need something more, something deeper? This morning, I'd like to share with you four stories about four people. Only one of these stories is real, but all of them are true. The first story. There was a man named Tom, and if you had just one sentence to describe him, you would probably say that Tom was a hard man. He'd been a police officer, and people often wondered if his jaded personality came as a result of his career or if his career had been the perfect fit for his personality. He was a hard man. One day, a hitchhiker, a homeless man, had stopped into the church earlier that morning, looking not for money, but for a meal. And so when Tom had come into the church office that day, he found this hobo sitting on a dirty green army duffel in the corner of the foyer near a stack of daily bread devotionals. The man was joyfully eating ham and sweet potatoes from the church's lunch the day before. Tom had appraised this stranger and was ordering him away. "Get up, get your stuff, you don't belong here." For Tom, church was just another word for wishful thinking. For Tom, the real world was the world that he'd retired from, a world where people will do anything to get ahead and where the scores are settled, certainly not forgiven. He'd grown up in the church, but he'd never really become a Christian. In his moments of need, when his father had died, when he'd lost his job, when he'd struggled with alcoholism, God had not been the one that he had turned to. He had two daughters, a wife, and a house. Tom was happy with his life, but not grateful. And he'd be the first to admit that he'd made mistakes in his life, but he'd never call those mistakes sins. If you asked Tom if he was a Christian, without thinking, he'd say yes, of course. But if you asked his friends or his neighbors, they'd have no idea. They wouldn't know. Tom came to worship, not regularly, but often enough, whenever one of his girls was singing. Every time he came, he looked distracted and inattentive, like he was restless to get to the main event, which for him never came. When the pastor preached, Tom would squint at him suspiciously, searching for the agenda hidden behind his words. And whenever the pastor saw Tom sitting in the pews, he would preach straight at him. He'd throw the gospel at him every which way, like he was target practice, hoping that something would take root in him. Nothing ever did. The words just bounced off him like seeds on a hard dirt path. Tom just responded with a blank face. It's not that Tom was a bad person, because he wasn't. It's just that he had let the world harden him so that the word never had much of a chance to take root. Listen to the second story. There once was a family. The husband and wife were maybe in their early 40s. They had three boys. Their oldest boy, Mark, was 12. Mark was in the hospital with leukemia. Except for occasional trips at home, Mark was in the hospital for almost a year. During that time, the chaplain would visit once or twice a week. One day, the chaplain noticed that Mark's mom had a cross around her neck. She even had a tattoo for the Trinity on her ankle. They talked about what they did, where they lived, the friends Mark had at home. And when the chaplain asked to pray with them, they said yes, even though they were uncomfortable with that. The family said that they were Mennonites, so the chaplain asked them if he could contact their pastor for them. They said, no, he probably doesn't know who we are. He asked if they had a small group or friends from the church that he could call for support. Once again, they said no. They blushed and told the chaplain that they'd last gone to church a few years ago. They said, we wanted to expose our children to it. They said, but we never went really much deeper than that. It never became a part of our regular lives. Mark's father added, we believe in God, though. We're good people. That's enough, isn't it? The chaplain spoke with Mark and his family countless times after that first afternoon. And every time he did what a pastor is supposed to do, he tried to be Jesus for them. He tried to get them to articulate their feelings and name their fears. He encouraged them to look to their faith and to identify where they felt God was in this struggle. One of the last conversations that he had with Mark's parents happened one morning. They'd just been given some bad news, a setback in Mark's treatment. They talked about it for a while, and when he asked if he could pray with them, Mark's parents said, no, we've lost our faith. Now, it's not like seeing children in Mark's place wouldn't stretch any parent's faith to the breaking point. But the chaplain had to wonder if their faith been a deeper part of their lives, it might not have been so easily blown away. The fact is, they never let their faith take root in their lives. And when they got to a point in their lives when they needed a faith to grab onto, it wouldn't hold them. Eventually, Mark returned home and was quite well, but his parents' faith never did. Listen to the third story. There was a man named John. He was a learned man. He was 70 or so. He'd been a teacher, a principal, a professor. He'd served on township board and city councils and task forces. He'd coached hockey and baseball teams and led Boy Scouts. He'd traveled all over the world. He had a family. His life was full of activity. In the short time that his pastor had known him, John was always asking questions. What does the Bible say about X? Is it true that Jesus did Y? I've always wondered about Z. What do you think? Initially, the pastor thought the barrage of questions was because he was an educator and thus naturally curious. But that was only part of it. One Sunday morning, well before worship began, the pastor met John for breakfast at a nearby diner. The passage that Sunday morning was the beginning of John's gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John, the retired teacher, commented on the dense language, and he asked the pastor to unpack it for him. "What the heck does that mean?" he said. The pastor said that it's John's poetic way of saying that Jesus is God. John's pastor thought that was a pretty basic concept, so he kind of answered quickly in a matter-of-fact kind of way. But John said, "What?" Like he'd missed the punchline. John sipped his tea and he said softly, "I don't know why I've never heard that before." By the time he set his tea back down on the table, there were tears on his face, and the pastor had no idea why. He waited for John to say something, and after a moment, John told him how he had a PhD after his name, how he could point to schools he'd helped build, how he could rattle off the names of children he'd taught, teachers he'd taught, how his savings was flush with the fruit of life's work, how his home was filled with pictures and trinkets from all the places he'd been. But then he confessed, "I've never given my faith a fraction of the time I've given to other things. I've been a Christian all my life, but I don't know any more about my faith than I did when I was 12 years old. I tell people all the time that you'll be in my prayers, and that would be true if I did, but I've never really learned how to pray. I've been a Christian all my life, but my faith is the one thing in my life I don't have anything to show for. I can point to kids who know math because of me, but I can't point to anyone who knows God more deeply because of me." The frankness of what he said took the wind out of him. A moment passed, he patted his pastor's hand and said, "It's not that my faith wasn't important to me, it's that so many other things were important too." Listen, none of these stories are real, but all of them are true. I've known these people, and you have too. But I have known other people as well. People in whom the faith has grown and flowered. People whose lives are beautiful. It's like their lives are fertile soil for God to work in. They are genuine, truly humble, serving Christians who live in the same world as Tom. They work in the same places as Mark's parents, and they have the same sort of friends that John does. But there's something different about them, something deeper. They possess a faith that is rooted deeper than the made-up superficial spirituality of the world. They possess a type of maturity, wisdom, that anchors them in the midst of a turbulent world that's often juvenile and impulsive and selfish, blown and tossed about by the fads and whims of the day. They have a faith with deep, deep roots. They are religious in the truest sense of the word. Of course, they're spiritual, but they're also religious in that they accept the rigors and discipline of joining themselves to a story and a community that stretches back thousands of years and carries them forward into eternity. That's religion. They pray, they worship, they serve, and they entrust themselves to Jesus. I want to close this morning with a fourth story. This story is both real and true. Jesus had come announcing the good news of his kingdom. He had told stories about his kingdom, performed many miracles, healing the broken, driving out evil spirits, welcoming the outcast, and breaking bread with sinners. But no one displayed the type of faith that he was looking for. No one that Jesus met truly grasped who he was, or the kingdom that he was talking about, or the God that he was sent by. No, all the people that Jesus met were like the soil in his parable. Their lives were either hardened against others and the evils of the day, or their lives were too entangled with the ways of the world, too content with the status quo. Even Jesus' own followers, his friends, his disciples, did not have the faith that was deep enough to understand him. They were willing to follow Jesus only if it meant success and power. It seemed that to Jesus that no one in Israel had the faith he was looking for. It was all so shallow and misplaced. None had the deep-rooted faith to see who Jesus was. No one had the faith needed to understand and follow him. But just as Jesus was about to give up and make his final journey to Jerusalem, he found the faith that he had been looking for. He found his one true disciple. There on the side of the road was a blind beggar named Bartimaeus. He had been there all his life. As Jesus and his disciples were passing by, Bartimaeus began to cry out, "Son of David, Jesus, mercy, have mercy on me." Many people tried to shut him up, but he yelled all the louder, "Son of David, mercy, have mercy on me." Jesus heard him and stopped dead in his tracks, and he called Bartimaeus over. Throwing off his beggar's cloak without any hesitation, Bartimaeus was on his feet at once and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What can I do for you?" And Bartimaeus said, "Teacher, I want to see." "On your way then," said Jesus. "Your faith has healed you, has saved you." In that very instant, he recovered his sight, and he followed Jesus on the way. So what makes Bartimaeus so different? Why is his story different from the others? Well, there's a lot of things, but what stands out to me is this. Bartimaeus knew how to pray. Author Brian Zahn writes that to be religious at its core is to pray, and to pray is to be shaped and formed. What Bartimaeus does that no one else does is that he prays to Jesus. He prays in the most basic of ways, rooted in the ancient hopes and prayers of his people, their Psalms. He cries out to Jesus for mercy, just like in the Psalms. He cries out for Jesus to save him, just like in the Psalms. He has no hesitation, only humility, need, and trust. Bartimaeus had been praying for mercy his whole life. He asked Jesus for what only God could give him, his sight. Bartimaeus is asking for his freedom. He's asking for salvation. And it's this kind of faith that saves him. As a parent of a child who's blind, this is one of my favorite stories, but not because Bartimaeus is healed. I often remind people that while my daughter does not have vision, it does not mean that she cannot see, just that she sees differently. In fact, there are times she sees more than I do. Bartimaeus has faith that allows him to see Jesus when no one else could. Of all the people Jesus meets, he's the one who understands him. I don't doubt that Bartimaeus' sight was healed, but for me, there's something much deeper going on here. The sight that Bartimaeus is given is the one that allows him to see the kingdom of God. It's the sight that's needed to follow Jesus. It's the sight given by deep faith. After all, Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." To be religious is to pray, and Bartimaeus prayed. His prayers were the rich soil in which the roots of faith grew deeply, and that is why he was saved. That is why he alone could see. That is why he could follow. When the crowds would press in on Jesus to hear him preaching, I'm sure that there were plenty who wanted to hear clear-cut, practical kinds of teaching. Do this, don't do that, follow these three steps to simple living. But what Jesus gives them instead are stories like the one I told you today. Jesus never says it, he never makes it obvious, but what he's doing is inviting them to consider who they are in these stories, who they really are, and who God would have them become. So which story is yours today? Are you spiritual or are you religious too? What are your prayers? How deep are your roots?
If you have questions or comments about the previous recording, please send us an email to lumc@live.com. If you would like more information about Leamington United Mennonite Church, please visit our website at www.lumc.ca.